T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
David Falk will join us in a couple minutes. The former, he's a current agent, but used to represent some of the great basketball players of our time. Michael Jordan, Patrick Ewing, guys like that. We spoke to him briefly yesterday. We only had 10 minutes with him. And what was interesting is we're seeing Leon Rose likely become the next team president of the New York Knicks. And one of the things early on was we asked him about, did you ever want to do this? I mean, this was the primo agent.
Yep.
And he said he was offered a job 10 times.
Yes.
Which is kind of funny, and it also reminds you or shows you that the idea of going to a super agent is not something that just started 5 minutes ago.
Right.
And it's intriguing to see the positives of what a super agent like that can bring. Because I think that the initial reaction people have is relationships and free agents. And the truth is, that's a part of being an executive, but that is not the main part. The main part is putting together a good roster, is drafting the right guys, is building a front office
right,
where you can, especially nowadays, scout people and young players from all over the world. I mean, all you got to do is look at the NBA All-Star team. There are tons of kids from all over the world. But the other thing I've heard, and I heard this about Brody when he took the Met job, is that because you deal with every team, you have an insight to every team. You could almost have like a view of
right,
how every organization runs themselves.
Yep. And certainly a relationship with every team.
And
I mean,
so,
you have to.
Absolutely. Now,
yep,
the problem is some of those relationships
right,
are bad relationships.
True.
They might all be good relationships.
True.
But we've seen it a few times now in the NBA. Arne Tellem runs the Detroit Pistons. Mm-hmm. Bob Myers with Golden State.
Yep.
There's actually a lot of examples. And so
Lakers, obviously.
Yeah, with Rob Pelinka. And look, he got sort of lucky because LeBron James wanted to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have LeBron James, life is easier.
Right.
So, but it's fascinating to think about that transition. And he joins us right now. Thank you for coming on again, David, by the way. We appreciate you coming
really
on yesterday.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
You know, you only gave me like 10 minutes. And, you know, most people I could barely say hello in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me make something clear. We didn't give you 10 minutes. They were kicking us out at 6 o'clock. Our show is over. You know what I mean?
But you guys need someone that's got a little more juice to be able to negotiate longer time frames.
There, David? We go.
All right.
Know anyone?
let me look into it.
Yeah, you'd have to take a major pay cut to represent us. We were just talking about this. As a guy who's been probably the best agent ever, what are some of the skill sets that you think that brings to being a team executive? Some of the things that may give you an advantage if you're making that transition compared to the more traditional GM or team presidents in the modern NBA?
Well, I think the most obvious would be that you have a lot of experience negotiating player contracts. And the only, if I will, downside to that point is that in the last, probably 10 years, 70% of all the contracts in the NBA don't have any negotiations. They're either rookie-scale contracts, minimum contracts, exceptions to the cap, like the mid-level exception or the biannual exception, or max for the superstars. And so, the skills of a negotiator aren't nearly as important as for an agent as they were, in the prime of my career, because if you walk it in the door for LeBron James, there are no negotiations. You decide how long you
right,
want to sign for. Do you want an out? How many payments you want? There's only three sentences in the entire contract you're allowed to change. And so it's very mechanical. But I think the obvious answer for a GM would be your familiarity with contracts. So on the flip side, I think that most presidents of clubs, existing presidents, and most GMs would tell you right now that if an agent called up and said, God, I've got this player I think is really good, they could give a damn what an agent thinks about a player's talent evaluation. That's not his area of strength. His area of strength is once the team picks you in the draft or decides they want to sign you as a free agent, they've determined that the player's good, and your job is to assign an economic value to him.
Do you think, and we're talking to the great David Falk, do you think that players, because I've heard this from Knicks fans, and maybe this is fool's gold, I happen to think it is, but I'm curious what you think, that well, free agents are going to want to come here now. They like Leon. They know Leon. You know, former clients of Leon are going to come to the New York Knicks. Do you think that that would be attractive to free agents at all?
Well, first of all, historically, you know, New York is the mecca of basketball. The Garden, you know, is the Garden. And I think it's very important for the league that New York have a strong team. And, you know, as I said going in when we talked yesterday, I like Leon. You know, I can't say I have a lot of close friendships with agents. I don't. The one person I'm really close with is Arne Tellem, who's no longer an agent. I'd say second, you know, Jeff Austin, someone I really like, I hired, have a tremendous respect for. It's not the kind of business that breeds friendships. You're bashing each other's heads in.
Right, right.
You know, competing for players. And so I think it's unrealistic. First of all, Leon, there's only 15 spots on the team and there's a salary cap. And so if you had 10 clients that want to come, it's both a plus and a minus. How do you decide which of the clients you let, the former clients you let come? And the ones that don't want to come, does that all of a sudden dissipate the message that having an agent in there is going to help former players when you turn down five of your guys who have unrealistic expectations or their current agent thinks they're worth more than Leon thinks? So, you know, I wish him well. I'm happy for him. I think he's reached a point in his life where he wanted to try to do something different. And I totally understand and respect that. And I really hope it works because, as I said, I think it's critically important, you know, to the league that New York, you know, they've been principally absent from the playoff scene for 20 years since Patrick left. And I think it's an important market to have a presence since the media capital of the world.
You've mentioned that twice about the importance of New York and the importance to the NBA and maybe bigger than that, that the Knicks find success. What, in your view, has been the biggest hindrance to them finding success over these years?
Okay, so the David Falk philosophy of building a team, if I were a team executive, I think there's only one of two places you want to be as an NBA team. You either want to be one player away from being a very serious championship contender. So let's say for the sake of argument, you're the Clippers. I'm a huge Doc Rivers fan. I love Steve Ballmer. And you go out and get Marcus Morris, who's a very good player. He's not a superstar. I wouldn't even say he's a star, but he's a very good player. Maybe he puts him over the top. Or if you're not in that position, then you want to really be bad and you want to try to get a Zion Williamson or a LeBron James or a Kobe Bryant or, you know, a great young player, or Luka Doncic, that's going to overnight turn the fortunes of the team around. And the problem is that most owners aren't patient enough to do the latter, to have the team be bad enough that you're going to get a high pick. And so they're content to sort of try to be a playoff team, and that guarantees you're going to be in perpetual mediocrity.
So with James Dolan, the Knicks have done a lot of that till recently because they did try
I would say, forget James Dolan for a minute. I think New York fans, I mean, I grew up in New York,
right?
But I was not a Knicks fan. New York fans are very sophisticated, and they're very impatient. And in order, you know, I don't in any way, shape, or form agree with the philosophy that Hinkie had in Philadelphia with the process.
Right, right.
But, and I told him that to his face many times. He's a very smart guy. But I think that it takes, you have to have like a five-year plan to say, okay, here's where we are. Now, the irony is, and I will say publicly, I love Steve Mills, known him a long time, think he's a very bright guy, and Scott Perry's been a friend for many years. I think the Knicks are poised to really be able to turn it around next year because of the great job that Scott and Steve did in having flexibility in the cap for next year. All the contracts are up. So now they're poised. I really didn't understand what you accomplished by changing management midstream. I mean, I think that's, if you're going to make that move, you make the move at the end of the year, unless you're making it for PR reasons. But so I think the Knicks are in a really good position now, you know, to go into the free agent market or, you know, whatever they need to do. But it's going to take time. They're not going to have a championship team overnight.
Right, right.
And I think you have to just basically accept the reality, you know, of the way teams you know, get built. I mean, you look, for example, everyone points to the example of Oklahoma. When Sam Presti took over Oklahoma in like 07, 2007, they were still in Seattle. They drafted Kevin Durant, number two. They drafted Jeff Green, number three, number five. The next year, they drafted Russell Westbrook, number four. And the following year, James Harden, number three, and added Ibaka at about, I don't know, like 19 or something like that. Okay, now you got a core of five really good young players. And they're on the way. Now, they made one tragic mistake. And for $2 million, they didn't keep Harden.
Right.
And had they had Harden, I think they would have won three or four championships. Mm-hmm. But it took 4 or 5 years to put that in place. No matter how much money you have, no matter where you are, no matter how famous the Garden is, it's almost impossible to do it overnight.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you about having not only the cap flexibility, but they've got 7 first-round picks in the next 4 years now.
Okay, but let's talk about that.
Sure.
I don't think first-round picks are worth nearly as much as they were worth 10, 15 years ago. And if you study, like I do, the success rate of first-round picks. So let's talk about, like, the number one pick in the draft, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How many number one picks have been a bust in the last 10 years? The kid Bennett, who went to Cleveland,
yeah,
was a bust. Kwame Brown was a bust. Bargnani was a bust. I mean, draft picks aren't what they were 15 years ago when you drafted Michael Jordan's and Patrick Ewing's and Charles Barkley's and LeBron James's. I think the value of first-round pick,
but don't
frankly,
you think even though, like, you're right, obviously, there is no guarantee, but having more of them gives you a better chance of finding the Kevin Durants, the James Hardens, or even Giannis, who was 15th. Why not?
Giannis was more than 15, I think, but because of the system, and this is my own opinion, okay? I think that because the players don't stay in school long enough, I think that the failure rate of draft picks has skyrocketed across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like saying, if you're going to have a bad investment, do you have a better chance of having a good one if you make more bad investments? And the answer is no. I think you're better off making trades and signing free agents is probably a bet. But the beauty of draft picks is financial, that if you find a Kevin Durant or you find a Luka Doncic, he's on a rookie wage scale for 4 years. And that's the way you keep the payroll down, and you use the money you save, saving the payroll,
right,
to go out and pay for an overpriced free agent.
Right. But also, to your point, you can use those draft picks to trade
Correct.
For a disgruntled star. So I think that's the value in that, too. Not
no,
that
I, I'm not saying they're not valuable. I don't think they're as valuable as they've been. And I think people look at the future. They look at draft picks like they're hit and miss, you know.
Right.
Very hit and miss.
Yeah.
Is there a way to get it right with the one-year college player? I mean, obviously, if there was a magic formula, you'd have it,
yeah,
and you'd be the one to have it.
I think there is. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Just don't draft him.
I've for 20 years, I've been a vocal critic of the system. I think it's really dumb. Now, I'm not saying that a player who's a LeBron type has to go to college. I don't care if a guy goes pro in the fifth grade. I don't think the NBA should allow the players to play in the NBA till they're 21, like football.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's from a marketing standpoint, so they become better known, they're more mature, you cut down the amount of mistakes you make. I mean, there's a million reasons for it. And I think we need to beef up the G League to let a guy who doesn't want to go to school play, or he could play in Europe, he could play in Asia, he could freaking play on the moon. I'm a very vocal critic of the system we have, and it's going to get worse when we go back to letting the high school kids come out, because you're going to have more and more mistakes. And when I tell you that the value of draft picks is declining, it's going to decline even more when you let high school kids come out.
Interesting. We're talking to David Falk about the NBA, state of the NBA, and obviously Leon Rose, who we are assuming is going to make the jump and become the team president of the New York Knicks. You mentioned why you think the Knicks have had issues over the last decade and a half. Fans believe it's the owner's fault. What is the reputation of James Dolan around the league?
I mean, I really don't want to get to that. I have a good reputation. I have a good relationship with James. Never had an issue with him. You know, I think if you're an agent, your job is to find a way to get along with the owners. You know, you may disagree with them. You may have time from time. You may find yourself on opposite sides, but they run the show, and so you have to find a way to get along with them. And, you know, the irony is, you look at the hockey side, They're doing great.
I know.
Same
I know.
Owner.
Yeah.
And it's no different here than in Washington. I'm good friends with Ted Leonsis, who's had amazing success. They won the Stanley Cup. He's a very bright guy. When Michael Jordan came to Washington to be the team president, I brought him here for Ted. I had a terrible relationship with the owner, Abe Pollin. And in spite of my relationship with Abe, I recommended to Michael to come here. And Ted's had great success on the hockey side, and they've struggled on the basketball side. So, you know, you could the easy answer is to say it's the owner.
Right.
And I'm not saying that I think that, you know, that I think Dolan is a Jerry Buss or a Jerry Reinsdorf, or I think are two of the great owners in the NBA over the last, you know, 25, 30 years. But I think the Knicks are historically have been a storybook franchise. People want to come there. It's a great city to live in. It's a great opportunity in marketing. But you have to have the right structure. You have to have the right game plan. You know, as an example, if you want to be critical, I think it was definitely a mistake to fire Steve in midseason. Like, what are you going to bring someone that's going to make it better? What's he going to do? You fire him a week before the trade deadline. I mean, I think you get through the trade deadline, and if you know, you could always fire him. It gives you more time to either make a deal with Leon. Suppose they can't make a deal with Leon.
I think the worry was, and again, we don't know the truth of this, but some of the reporting over the last couple of days is he wanted to be more aggressive in trading for players as opposed to collecting draft picks, which you may have agreed with anyway, but that there was a difference in view on how the trade deadline should have been handled, and maybe that's what led to it.
Day, at the end of the day, Jim's the boss. If he says, Steve, thanks for your opinion. Here's how we're going to do
right.
it. Right. Boom, it's over.
Right.
I just, you know, again, I'm not here to be critical of what they've done.
It.
I'm trying to give you like a philosophical overview. What amuses me, and I'll go back to what we talked about yesterday, is that the fact that Golden State has had success by having a former agent who I am tremendously fond of and respect, I'm happy for him, he's a great guy, Bob Myers, doesn't mean that it's going to work on every team.
Right.
All the agents are the same. I think in many ways there are more problems having an agent as your GM because of the competition amongst agents. If I agreed to run a team, a lot of agents hate my guts. You know, I was the market leader. People thought I was arrogant. They thought I was egotistical. And if all of a sudden I was running a team and, you know, guys say, oh, screw David. I'm not going to put my guy with David. That guy was kicking my ass for 20 years. So I'm not necessarily sure that there aren't a lot of downsides of having an agent. But beyond the downsides, the question really is the fact that Bob Myers has done a great job in Chicago mean that that's the paradigm of how teams get better?
Right.
I think Sam Presti is one of the great young GMs in the league.
No question.
And I'm not sure he's ever been an agent, or I don't know what his basketball pedigree, but he's a very, very bright guy. I think he's done a great job. You know, I think Danny Ainge has done an amazing job in Boston. Does that mean we should get, you know, more former players to be GMs?
Yeah. Now, there's no perfect science to it. By the way, I've always been curious about this. It's been 25 years now. Did Michael Jordan almost sign with the Knicks in 1996?
No, I think that would have been a long shot.
Okay, so it was never really that close to happening because there's been legend that, oh, he was about to sign. You'd know better than anybody.
Yeah, there was a legend that he stopped playing basketball because of a gambling problem. That was, I mean, you know, when you reach the status of Michael Jordan, everyone has their own theories, and you know, he's not the kind of individual to go around publicly debunking them. So,
right, like, okay.
Everyone's entitled to their opinion, but, you know, I think, again, I want to be crystal clear so that no one comes back and misinterprets. I'm happy for Leon. I think it's a great opportunity for him to spread his wings, try something new and different. I've known William Wesley since 1986. He's a good friend. I'm waiting for the, you know, I'll take bets on how long it's going to take before they hire John Calipari to be the next coach.
You think so?
You think?
Even though he's denying it, think that happens?
I'd say 30 seconds. you know, and I hope it works. I mean, I'm rooting for him to make it work.
Do you think that combination does work?
Do I think hiring the three of them?
Yeah.
I mean, the jury's out.
Okay.
Jury's out.
You think that Coach Cal would take that job? You think he'd leave college to coach in the NBA with a team that's, you know, at least right now rebuilding.
Well, I'll put it this way. If the reason that you're hiring Leon and Wes, you know, is because of he's got strong connections with former clients. He's got a lot of former Kentucky players like Towns and Gilchrist and mm-hmm. others, you know, then you would expect they have a good work relationship, a good rep. It's really critical that the coach and the GM are on the same page.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
What happens frequently in the NBA, I called a coach yesterday about a player we have as a free agent. And before I called the owner, I called the coach, because if the coach doesn't want to play him, then it's a waste of time to sign him. You know, you don't want to sit on the bench. And in many situations, the GM will make a move that the coach doesn't like, or the coach will play a player the GM wants to bring in. And so everyone's got to be on the same page. Listen, at the end of the day, this is no different, really, than any other business. You have to have a sound business plan. You have to discipline to execute it. And you have to have, you know, chemistry amongst the people on the team that are executing the plan. And I think in New York, it's very hard to sell to the fans, hey, it's going to take 5 years to be good, especially because they've had such a long stretch where they haven't been good. But that's what it's going to take. I don't think that Dolan could have hired Red Auerbach's reincarnation, who I think is the greatest GM in history, or Jerry West, who's my personal idol. I love Jerry West, who I think is the most astute judge of talent in the history of the NBA. And you're not going to win overnight. It's just not going to happen. And so, you know, you have to just make up your mind that you're going to have a plan that makes sense to avoid the mistakes of the past. But it's going to take time, and the fans have to buy into that.
Kim Jones and Evan Roberts here on The Fan with super NBA agent David Falk, who clearly changed and continues to change the NBA. And David, selfishly, I'm so excited to be talking to you, because I grew up rooting for Georgetown and wow. Patrick Ewing. I cried when that darn Villanova team and that darn
Me
point
too.
Guard from Villanova. I wept in my living room when they lost that game. And I'm curious why it took Patrick having to go back to his alma mater to become a head coach, a
wow,
guy who grinded.
You are prescient. So I spent from today from 12:30 to a quarter of three with Big John, sitting with him and talking. I could listen to that man for hours.
Yep.
He's one of the smartest men I've ever met. I've said publicly, I've said in my book, he's had more impact on me than any man, including my own father, in my life. And then we left the meeting. We walked in to say hi to Pat. They're playing DePaul tomorrow. And John asked me that very question. Why did it take going back to Georgetown to prove to all the naysayers in the NBA that Patrick couldn't coach? He's a hell of a coach. And, you know, as I said, when we talk about hiring an agent, you talk about coaches, people in the NBA, very few people are trendsetters. Everyone are trend followers. And when I was in my business, I didn't care what the other agents were doing. I had my own ideas of mm-hmm. what the right way to do it, the right approach to it. I'm not saying I was always right, but I had my own ideas, and I didn't want to be a follower. It would have given me no satisfaction just to, like, do a slotted contract because Bob Wolf did it or Larry Fleischer did it. And that's why a guy like Patrick came out of college and signed for 55% more than the highest-paid veteran mm-hmm. in the history of the league, and so did Danny Ferry when he came out as a rookie. But everyone follows it. So there's a ridiculous idea that big men don't make good coaches, right. Even though the guy with the most wins in the history of the mm-hmm. NBA is a big man named Phil Jackson, yeah. who wasn't a particularly good player. And so there are a lot of ideas like draft picks having certain values that time proves are wrong, but people don't change their views on them.
Do you think an NBA, I mean, and listen, Patrick may be very happy at his alma mater. And I think you also helped to build that building there for Big John, which I respect an awful lot. I think I read that. So Patrick's happiness at Georgetown, perhaps aside, do you think the NBA now becomes more open to Patrick Ewing, the coach?
If they were smart.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying they are smart.
Right, I understand. You know,
a lot of times my answer is, hey, this is the NBA. Well, people say, that doesn't make any sense. Why are we doing that? And I say, hey, this is the NBA. People don't always – there's some very smart people you know, particularly now, if you look at most of the owners, you look at guys like Steve Ballmer, you know, Ted Leonsis, you know, the three guys who own Milwaukee. These guys are brilliant guys, billionaires. They've been captains of industry. But they come in and they, you know, they get advice from people that aren't captives of industry, that are running teams or GMs. And I don't think the advice is always sound. Like, these are new players. And then I'll give you a great example, okay? 4 years ago, we agreed to represent a player from the University of Virginia named Malcolm Brogdon. Now, he called me when he was a senior in college, and he asked me to represent him. And I said, no, you're not going to get drafted. He said, Mr. Falk, you must be, like, having Alzheimer's. I'm a two-time All-American in the freaking ACC. I say, hey, Malcolm, that's called college basketball, and you're asking me about pro basketball. And I'm telling you, if you're lucky, you'll be going the last five picks in the second round. So we made him go back to school, got a master's degree in public policy. He's a very bright young man. And we picked two teams that we wanted to get drafted by. Memphis in the first round at 17. We thought he'd be a tremendous compliment to Mike Conley, who's a small point guard. He gets hurt a lot, but he's a terrific player. Malcolm's 6'5", 210. He's built like a fullback. He was the National Defensive Player of the Year on a team that prides itself on defense. And we picked Milwaukee because their coach, who's a friend of mine, Jason Kidd,
right,
was a 6'5 point guard, one of the greats in the game. And a lot of people criticized Malcolm for his shooting. So I kept calling Jason and say, Jay, when you were at Berkeley, were you like a lights-out three-point shooter? And he would just start laughing.
Of course, I'm laughing.
He would just start laughing because he knew a saying, like, you get better as a shooter in the pros. So Memphis, you know, John Hollinger, who's the analytics guy, subscribes to the general NBA view that a player who's 18 is a way better risk than taking a guy who's 22, because by the time the guy's 18 gets to 22, he's going to be so much better. So they drafted Wade Ball in the fourth, who they cut before the year was even over, and is now playing in China. So did he become a better player than Malcolm Brogdon at 22? He wasn't even in the league.
Yeah.
Malcolm Brogdon
rookie of the year.
Malcolm Brogdon became the first player in 50 years to be the rookie of the year who wasn't drafted in the first round.
Yeah.
So now if we had to do that same scenario all over again tomorrow, I guarantee you Malcolm Brogdon would still not go in the first round. And neither would. Now, Draymond Green went in the second round. Wesley Matthews went in the second round. The best place to, if you want to know, in my opinion, the best place to draft a guy is 31 to 40. Those guys aren't superstars, but they're really contributors. They're generally four-year guys. They're mature, and they last forever. That's the place to really get a bargain in the NBA. We had a guy like that a few years ago who's just starting to come into his own, named Gary Trent Jr.
Yep.
In Portland. He finally, you know, he's had trouble. They have a great backcourt with Lillard and McCollum, and it's been very hard for him to break through. But, you know, he's had a few really breakout games, and he's going to be a really good player. He's a 6'7", two guard with great size. I think he's going to be really good. He went 36.
Yeah.
And so my point is that the NBA has certain trends that people all glom onto. And many times trends are wrong, or the reasoning behind what creates a trend is wrong. And this conversation, you know, was initiated not because of Leon Rose personally, but by the idea, would an agent make a good GM?
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the answer is, I don't think being an agent has anything to do with whether you'll be a good GM. I think it has to do with how smart you are, how well you know the collective bargaining agreement. I don't think there are 10 agents that could pass the test on the collective bargaining agreement. Maybe five.
Right, right. David, we really appreciate you coming on.
You gave
us a lot of time, and we learned a lot. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, I want to publicly say to Leon, I wish you a lot of good luck, as I did privately. I really hope it works. I really hope the Knicks get a lot better. If my boy Worldwide West, who I've known forever, is a part of the package. He's one of the great personalities I've ever met. Really well-connected guy. Really interesting person. I really hope it works. And I will take bets despite the denials. I'll take bets on Calipari being the coach.
Oh, wow.
There we go.
Wow.
I like it.
By the way, everyone should buy your book, The Ball Truth, to hear more from you, because you've certainly experienced it all in the NBA and the world. We appreciate it.
I've been very fortunate to do something I love and be around amazing people like John Thompson and Michael Jordan and Patrick. And, you know, will Patrick ever get an opportunity in the NBA? when a team is really smart and wants a guy who's extremely knowledgeable, one of the hardest working people I've ever been around, who's got a great personality, they'll call him. Until that time, they'll just probably continue to recycle the same old
guys.
Well,
what about Leah? Instead of Coach Cal, will he call Patrick up?
I doubt it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Dave.
Thank you so much, David.
My pleasure.
David Falk. You can check out that book, The Ball Truth. Very informative. And he's predicting Coach Cal's going to take the job, even though today Coach Cal said he wouldn't. But as we know, that doesn't mean anything.
And I think David said in 30 seconds. So I think he felt very sure of that. And I loved his stuff on Pat selfishly, but also in this city. I think it's more than just me. I loved his stuff on Patrick.
Oh, absolutely. Very interesting.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.